Pride of Detroit, PODcast, POD for the people out there, the people. By the people, we mean the Detroit Lions people in the room, Detroit Lions fans. Who knows? Maybe the players listen too. Maybe actual Lions listen to this podcast as well. We hope we are entertaining for them as well.
Maybe the band Toto listens to us.
That would be great if they did. I'd like to know what they think of the remix by Brian Shepherd we have in there to start the show. That voice right there is Jeremy Reisman, the fearless leader at Detroit on Lion. I am your adequate but suffering host right now, Chris Perfett. If I sound a little weird or if I have to stop quite a bit, it's because I have like massive canker sores on my tongue. I'm grossing out everyone I meet by saying that, but it's true. I believe in being honest with myself. Follow me on Twitter at Chris Perfett, P-E-R-F-E-T-T. Ryan Matthews. Back is the motherfucking rock god. At Ryan underscore P-O-D. He is back fresh from Ford Field. Ryan, my boy, how you doing?
Your boy is doing better than you. And May you never, ever have to explain what you just explained. And then and then try to get people to follow you.
I believe in being honest. You know what? Following me on Twitter is kind of like having canker sores.
That should be your Twitter profile.
Yeah, you should quote yourself in your own bio.
The canker sores of Twitter accounts.
Maybe one day again. As is, I'm taking advantage of 50 characters for my Twitter handle.
How about at canker sore Chris? You want to change?
Let's not. Let's forget I even said this. This is what I get for trying to be open and honest and vulnerable with you people.
It's okay, because this was a canker sore of a game. Can we be honest?
Can we please stop talking about canker sores? I can feel them now.
All right. Well, let's just talk about how that was.
No bueno.
It was not a great game, but the Lions did come out victorious. I thought it'd be a little bit more of a comfortable win. It certainly was not a comfortable win at pretty much any point in that game.
So, In addition to suffering from sores right now, I was also hungover this morning. I woke up a little late before the start. Jeremy, can you just tell me what the attitude was like on social media among Lions Nation when the Cleveland Browns went up 10 points to nothing?
I think Ryan might be better able to answer that question, because I was just on my phone the entire game, not on my computer, and Ryan was running the POD count. How many people wanted to fire Caldwell 10 minutes into the game?
I didn't pay attention to the Twitter notifications at all, because I knew that I would get bogged down and I would get sidetracked.
You would start a fight, is what you're saying.
Yeah, that's the other thing too. So I don't want to get like when I get a little bit of power, I don't want to get it completely taken away. So when I get access to the Twitter account and I get to run it, I respect Jeremy's, you know, the privilege that he's giving me. So I didn't want to destroy that until the end of the game when they announced the record attendance that they set for a 1 p.m. game. And then I had to remind everybody that they packed 80,000 people in there for WrestleMania 23. But that's beside the point. When the Browns jumped out to that 10-0 lead, I felt like Ford Field was a graveyard. There was zero energy in there. Like when the Browns were after that first series, almost when the Lions had three plays that went for negative 13 yards.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, the Lions, I guess, aren't ready. Taylor Decker just gave up a sack to Myles Garrett. The world is going to crumble. And then, you know, exactly what we had talked about, Jeremy. The Lions gave the Browns good field position and they came out with the field goal. They came out with the touchdown. And I was like, okay, I want the Browns to cover, but I don't want them to win. So, but yeah, I mean,
why did you want the Browns to cover?
Because I picked the Browns in my office.
You had money on them. You had money on them.
Well, like in a roundabout way, I got money on everything, Chris. I'm a degenerate gambler.
Yeah, I think, I mean, besides going 3-and-out with literally three plays that all went for negative yards and then coming out the next drive, the first dagger in the second drive was that Taylor Decker wasn't playing, and suddenly you're like, did he re-injure?
I lost it.
Yeah, and then the Lions essentially go negative again, and then that last play where Stafford, I don't know what he was thinking, just threw a duck over the middle of the field where no one was but Browns players, giving the Browns easy field position where they pushed it in for 10 yards, but like, or 10 points. Yeah, this was a mess of a first game, but or first quarter, but I don't know. Like, I wasn't worried at that point. It's just like, ugh, it's one of those games where the Lions are annoyingly going to, you know, let them hang around for a long time. I'm not that worried. And then when the Lions get the scoop and six from Nevin Lawson to go finally go up in the first half, 17-10, I'm like, all right, we can exhale. It's probably going to be safe the rest of the way. But then there was that whole entire third quarter, and that's when I start to really get worried about not only this game, but the season, because the Lions defense just evaporated completely. The first two drives of the second half, Browns come out, 8-play drive for 85 yards. Just in 4 minutes, they score. Lions essentially go 3 and out. They technically get one first down in there. Browns again, 10 plays, 80 yards, 6 minutes. Another touchdown. Suddenly they're up 24-17 with, you know, halfway through the third quarter. And I'm wondering
more than
if
halfway. More than halfway. The quarter was almost over by that point. Yeah.
And suddenly you're looking at this game like maybe everything that's happened up until this point has been fool's gold. And I know we've been very up and down on this team already through 8 weeks, but just in this game, the crazy swings of emotion, just like, oh, what a horrible start. Oh, finally we got our bearings back. Oh my God, this team's horrible. And then the fourth quarter comes and they finally get their act together. I don't really know where I stand after the end of this game. Do you guys have any idea what you think of this team right now? Is it really a team that can contend for the division or at least a wild card right now?
I know this, is that I don't know anything about this team. And I should not be saying that 9 games into the season, over halfway, I don't know what this team is. And you know what? That's not a sign for optimism. That's not a sign, Lions fans, to say that they're going to go 12-4 down the stretch. That's a sign to say, oh God, we are going to lose some terrible, awful games coming up here and probably finish around like 8-8. Like, there's nothing that gives me confidence about this team. If you don't know what this team is at this point, like, what's the strength of the team? Like, we can keep pointing to Darius Slay and Glover Quinn, but I really don't know what this team's identity is. And teams without identities are just kind of listless. Like, they just don't have a good, what's the identity? They just don't have a good defense. Like, I don't know, like, the comeback in this, because it did have to be a comeback several times. It was Eric Ebron for the go-ahead touchdown, which, I mean, hey, who saw that coming? But just in general, too, like, I'm just checking over the box score again. I mean, this is the Browns we're talking about here. With all due respect to my Toledo boy, DeShone Kizer, and with all due respect to Ryan Matthews, the rock god, Browns fan A number one, this is just, I guess I was expecting better against a team like this. I was not expecting DeShone Kizer to throw for 232 yards and run for another 57. That's another part of this defense you haven't even touched on, Jeremy, is like the Cleveland run game should not have been as good as it was. It should not have had 201 yards on the Lions.
I got some things I need to say about this real quick.
Mm-hmm.
When Jeremy, you mentioned, you know, when the teams came out for the second half and Cleveland put together those two drives that were, they were long drives. They were drives that covered the majority of the field. On that first drive, the Browns moved it. You said 8 plays, 85 yards. 70 of those yards were rushing. On the next drive, 10 plays, 80 yards. 40 of them were rushing. I mean, you're talking in two drives, 110 yards rushing. And the Browns had over 200 yards rushing after that second drive. So, I mean, it was like just it was halfway through the third quarter, and the Browns already had 200 put up on the Lions in terms of rushing yards.
Also in those two drives, they faced one third down. Like, there was absolutely no resistance coming from the Lions defense at that point.
And I think after that first drive, I sent out a tweet that said, okay, this is where Lions fans get to criticize Terrell Austin if they want to, and his ability to make in-game adjustments, because that first drive was just atrocious. I wasn't sure if that was the drive where they had a third down. I don't think it was, but
yeah, it was the second one.
Yeah, after that first drive that they had, where they had 70 yards rushing, it was just it was apparent that the Lions were not even game planning to stop the run. They weren't scheming to stop the run. There weren't enough players in the box. I mean, for all the people who, and this is another, you know, another ball of wax, for all the people who are complaining about no Tease Tabor, like, this was why Tease Tabor didn't play, because the dime packages, they didn't need an extra defensive back. They needed guys in the box to make tackles and to make plays and to stop the run. And I don't know why at no point it dawned on Terrell Austin to spy Deshaun Kizer or to do something. I remember one play where Kizer just had the entire middle of the field to run right up because of the defensive line. There were like three defensive linemen that were all trying to get into one gap. And that's really easy to block when those guys are essentially just mucking each other up. So like Kizer was able to run free. Isaiah Crowell was running for a ton of yards. Duke Johnson was running for a ton of yards. Like, and I thought that all the criticism in the world could have been warranted after that first drive. I said, look, okay, this just can't happen. Like you have to be able to game plan. And the thing was too, right after that was when the Lions had like a 5-play 27 yard drive that ended up in a punt. And I said, Terrell Austin hasn't had a whole lot of time, but in those couple minutes, I hope he figured out a plan to stop the running game. And then he didn't. And I was legitimately concerned after that drive.
Isaiah Crowell should not have 90 yards, no matter who he is. And then, yeah, Deshaun Kizer, like, I mean, we're going to talk about this later because I really wonder what would have happened this game if he didn't have to go out for those 7 plays or however long it was, Jeremy. But just in general, like, just the Lions have shown time and time again, they just get baffled when a quarterback decides to run.
It's the run defense to me is the most enigmatic part of this team right now, because they've had 4 or 5 really, really good performances against the Cardinals, Giants, Vikings, Panthers, Steelers. They held all those teams below 90 yards and typically below 4 point yards per carry.
One of those guys is Le'Veon Bell.
Right. And then Falcons, 150 yards, 5.4 carry. Saints, 193 yards, 5.2 a carry. And then today, 201 yards, 6.1 a carry. I don't know what to think of this run defense because we're running out of excuses. Like against the Falcons game, I think it was because Tavon Wilson and Jared Davis weren't there. Against the Saints, it was, Haloti Ngata got injured in that game. What excuse do we have this time? The Browns running attack isn't horrible. They were 10th in DVOA, so this isn't a horrible unit that the Lions gave up a ton of yards to. But I mean, this was the worst performance of this defense all year, and the best performance by this Browns offense all year. So something went wrong.
Well, I think I have an answer for that, Jeremy, or should I say, I think I have an answer.
Really?
Hold up. Yeah, I want to ask this because, like, Ezekiel Ansah has been a ghost, though. All these games, like, what difference would he have made if he played?
He has, but I think what's really an underrated facet of Ansah's game, and this has been brought up ad nauseum, I think, like, he's a really good run defender. I think he's pretty good at setting the edge. And he's able to contain things. And one thing that I did notice about the Browns today, they were bouncing a lot of stuff outside too at the same time. So I think that Ansah would have made a big difference. I mean, when you have guys in there who don't fit the same kind of mold that he does, putting in Cornwash, that guy's just he's a pass rusher. That's all he is. He gets after the quarterback.
I'm a little skeptical of that a little bit, but you reminded me of Jim Caldwell talking kind of about exactly this earlier in the week. And let me pull an exact quote from, I think it was this Thursday press conference. He says, on why he thinks Ansah is playing well, he says, well, like I said, he's doing a really great job setting the edge. He's really physical in the running game. He's making it hard for teams to get on the edge in that regard. So he's doing a lot of good things. And like I said, maybe there's one aspect of the game that's not translating in the stats, but everything else, he's doing well for us. So maybe there's something there, but I felt like the Lions were getting gashed up the middle too.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not trying to say that he would have been the cure-all, but I'm saying that he would have, I think that his impact was truly felt in this game. And I'm not trying to say that Ansah's had a great season by any means. I mean, the pass rushing, the inability to get pressure on the quarterback, that has been apparent. That's evident. Those are just facts. But I think something that goes understated about his game is his ability in you know, stopping the run. So I think that he would have made a difference. Would they, you know, would he have kept the Browns from running for 200 yards through the first, you know, 2.5 quarters? I don't think that would have made a huge difference, but I think it definitely would have made some.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to keep talking about this game. We've been pretty negative, and I know people are going to get mad at us on that. We're
stay negative.
Well, no. I think some people have kind of expected us now to be the slappies or something. And I don't know, there was a couple of good positives here, but just once again, like it's hard to be happy about having to pull out a win against the Browns. We'll be right back.
All right, I'm back.
We didn't really have a post-game show, Jeremy. Very sad about that.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping to maybe blast some Africa in, you know, through the speakers here.
That's not make for good podcasting.
I guess not.
Do we get to claim Beyonce because she's in the new Lion King movie or no?
No.
Just a quick question. Oh, okay. All right.
I think it's time to talk some positive stuff. And if we're talking this game, let's talk about the Lions offense because... I got a better than expected performance out of the Lions offense this week, I think. And after, sure, they had kind of that slow start, and pass protection, I think, was again an issue today, which is a bit disappointing with Taylor Decker back in the lineup. But the running game was occasionally there. Kenny Galladay was back and made some plays. As you mentioned before, Eric Ebron made a huge play. I was very impressed with this Lions offense. You know, they put up 31 of the 38 points today and did so mostly without the help of any turnovers. They were just driving. And this was a Browns defense that was probably right around average. So now the Lions have put up a good offensive performance against a really good Steelers defense, a pretty bad Packers defense, and now a pretty mediocre Browns defense. So I think this Lions offense is back on track, and there's still way too many negative plays, and I don't know how to get rid of them, and I don't understand why they keep happening. But they're making just as well. Now they're making it's a little bit of the run game.
Establish the run game. Gotta establish the run game.
But now they're making just as many big plays. You know, they had I think 3 rushes right around 20 yards this game. Galladay pulled in that 50-yarder. Tate had a 40-yarder. Ebron had a 29-yarder. Marvin Jones had a 22-yarder. They're getting these big plays on offense that we've been waiting for so long. And I was impressed with the way they played on Sunday.
Here's the thing about today's game, too, though. I thought they did a pretty good job of, quote-unquote, establishing the run. I mean, they had 19 carries total for 104 yards.
Yeah.
Browns.
Browns run defense is really good.
Yeah, that's the thing. But, I mean, I hate to be, you know, the stereotypical me right now, which is you take away the big plays and it's not there. And to me, I don't know. It's not as exaggerated as I think it was against the Giants game, but to me, it's just like the running games are either – running plays are getting either like 7-plus yards or -4, and there's no in-between. And – It's ridiculous. Like, you can't survive in a full game like that.
Yeah, sure. And you know that that's fair enough. And I totally agree that, you know, you need to be able to chunk yardage better. Mm-hmm. But they did have that one drive where there was the Amir Abdullah 20-yard run, and then after that there was the Theo Riddick 21-yard run. Those were both their longs on the day. But I don't know. Like, Theo Riddick did a pretty good job of running the football. Don't know how I just said those words, but you know, 4 carries, 35 yards, and the big run.
It's really the second straight game too of him doing that. I thought he was pretty good last week against the Packers.
Yeah, and I thought Abdullah did well too. And it, kind of surprising that they did only run the ball 19 times though. Like the Lions just didn't run a whole lot of plays at all because I mean early on the offense was broken, and then I mean 26 passes from Stafford, 19 running plays total. So. Mm-hmm. They didn't run a whole lot of plays because they seemed to, when they did get the ball and they ended up scoring, like they did it quickly.
Right. Just the end of that half was Browns possession, scoop and score for the Lions, Browns possession to end the half, than Browns possession to start the second half. The final play count was 77 plays for the Browns, 49 for the Lions.
Real quickly, can we give a shout out to the Lions defense on the goal line when at the end of the half, when DeShone Kizer decided to audible and QB sneak it, and all of the players were dead fish, like holding on to DeShone Kizer and not letting him get off the pot. That totally should have been delay a game on Detroit.
Absolutely. Like, Akeem Spence 100%. got away with it. But my God, who runs a quarterback sneak with no timeouts from the two? Like, and that wasn't just the 2 yard line. That was like the 2.5 yard line, 15 seconds, no timeouts. Who makes that call?
Kizer. Kizer went Browns. Rogue.
I don't Kizer know if I believe rogue. That. I don't nope. believe it.
Look at the rest of the way that the players reacted on that play. There was some guys who were like going out for like passing routes.
There was one guy. I don't know.
I think that he went rogue.
If he did, that is a big, like maybe the biggest rookie mistake you can make.
I want to ask about this though. I wanted to get back to DeShone Kizer because there's no butting about it. He kind of tore up the Lions, but just what do we think overall of his performance? Like, and we can pass this out to Ryan because I know he's a Browns fan, but because I'm kind of fascinated. We were talking before the show, Jeremy, we were just kind of wondering what would have happened if, Kizer didn't need to go out for those, what was it, 7 plays?
Right.
Yeah.
Like he looked to have been knocked out of the game. He can end up coming back in. Cody Kessler comes in 1 for 3 for 5 yards, gets sacked 3 times, loses 22 yards.
Essentially, like, he came in on 3rd down of 1 drive, was immediately sacked for 2 yards. Then he was in for 2 more drives. Both of them went 3 and out, a total of negative 13 yards in those 7 plays. 3 sacks where DeShone Kizer got sacked once the entire game. And yeah, that's essentially where the game ended. That moment right there where the Browns went 3 and out twice, the Lions score 2 fourth quarter touchdowns, and the game's over.
Right. Like we can talk about the boneheaded thing about the audible for the QB sneak, but I mean, otherwise than that, what do we think of Kizer? Like, and this is kind of less of a Lions question, more about if he's going to be a decent quarterback for the Browns or not. But I mean, just in general, like, just seemed to give the Lions quite a bit of fits.
He did. I don't know how much credit I want to give Kizer though. I don't know. Like, I don't think that this game did. I mean, there are some things I was really impressed with, like his athletic ability for a guy who is as big as he is. Like, I mean, he was moving. Like, he outran Tyre Whitehead on one play. And I was like, well, Tyre Whitehead's a pretty fast guy. And, you know, I was impressed by his ability to run. There were some passes where there was one pass, actually. It was an out route to the sidelines that he threw the ball right by, like, Darius Slay, where I was like, okay, that's a big time throw. Like, and I think it was on 3rd down too, if I'm not mistaken, to keep the drive moving. But like, so there were spurts where I was like, yeah, maybe DeShone Kizer could be an NFL quarterback. But then there were multiple, you know, things that made me think, I don't know why they don't go to Kessler. And then they went to Kessler by necessity. And I was like, I don't know why they don't have a better quarterback yet. Just in general.
Yeah.
Browns history right there.
Kizer definitely killed the Lions defense more with his feet than he did with his arm.
I thought, totally agree with that.
Terms of passing, there was really only 2 big plays in the game. One was that tight end pass that got them down into the red zone, and the other was that deep ball early with Nevin Lawson in coverage.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Lions secondary played pretty well again, like I expect them to. Not a perfect game, and Nevin Lawson again kind of stuck out as the one guy who struggled a little bit, even though he scored a touchdown in this game. But yeah, this was a defensive performance that looked a lot like the 2016 Lions to me. And maybe not the 2016 Lions weren't this bad at defending the run, but it's all up the middle. It's tight ends catching passes. It's linebackers with their back turned to plays. It's linebackers getting sucked up by blocks in the running game. I thought the linebackers had a god-awful game. Jared Davis, to me, he's taken a step back in the past 2 weeks. And I'm not worried long-term yet, but at the same time, I was hoping he'd be better by now, and he's not.
Sounds like it's time for someone to get rid of their jersey they have. Yeah, I don't know, but yeah. So my main point I don't think Kizer did enough to prove that he's like any kind of like quarterback for the Browns long term. But then again, hey, they tried to trade a first and a second round pick for AJ McCarron, so maybe they don't think Deshaun Kizer is their quarterback of the future either. So, I mean, the proof is kind of in the Sashi pudding. I don't know.
I don't know. Like, I'm kind of glad they did not get off the McCarron pick, because I mean, just honestly, like, what would have McCarron brought to this team over Kizer or Kessler, realistically?
I mean, what do you want me to say? Nothing.
I'm just saying, like, because that's always the problem. Is like, we keep asking the Browns to do these things where it's like trading for a quarterback, and then it's just kind of like, well, yeah, but that quarterback is pretty well ass, and if he's middling right now, he's going to be worse because it's going to the Browns. I really don't know what to do about their quarterback situation. Just seems like an unsolvable puzzle. Kizer was supposed to be like eased in, and they just decided, no, let's throw him in here right now and see what happens.
I mean, they did that, and what has been the result is Hugh Jackson's pulled him from multiple games. Like, he's like benched him, he's like pulled him out and then put him back in.
Yeah, like, and this is a guy who got like
him out. I don't know.
Yeah, this is a guy who also got, like, you know, given a raw treatment by his coach at Notre Dame, too. This is a really great way to make your quarterback pretty well confident with what the hell you're doing, so.
By the way, just to go back to the Lions really quick, and specifically my point about Jared Davis, I just got the Pro Football Focus grades that they allow us to publish on our own. Jared Davis scored a 28.2 grade this week, which...
Overall?
Yes.
Oh my.
Which ranks 59th positionally among linebackers, missed a couple tackles, looked lost in coverage, surrendering 75 yards through the air. That's what I saw. And I mean, like I said, it's not something that I'm worried about a long-term issue right now, but this was a rough game for him. And if the Lions are going to benefit from such a good secondary, they're going to need their linebackers to play a lot better. And I don't know if Jalen Reeves-Maybin being out has anything to do with it. I kind of think it doesn't, but I mean, the front seven is really bad right now. Really, really bad.
I don't know. So I agree with you, Jeremy. I think the good things that we've seen from Davis are probably something that we'll see more in the future. I just don't want to hold like this performance against him, like, in a certain way, because I really think that Terrell Austin did a terrible job. Like, I think he did a really poor job of kind of putting guys in position to make plays. Like, I just think that, you know, with the Lions getting so beaten up the middle, especially on some of these run plays, like, they weren't putting enough guys in the box. Like, I don't feel like they were scheming well. And I don't know. I could be wrong, but I'm just saying that, like, while Davis didn't have a good game, and he really didn't have a good game in coverage, I don't know. Like, I keep on saying I don't know, but like, it's the theme for this team.
It is.
I want to put the players that are on it.
Yeah, I want to put a bow on this discussion just by saying, Ryan, you saying there he did a poor job of putting players in position to make plays sounded really, really, really close to the old Mike Valenti rant.
Good.
Make plays.
I mean, it's almost word for word, except just replace Terrell Austin with someone else.
Are we going to get a good Valenti rant on Monday? Maybe I should listen in.
Oh,
why? Why would you do that? Why would you do that? Especially when you know most people are going to be listening to this after Valenti has already gotten off his microphone.
Well, I mean, I have to get one shot in there when Michigan is at its peak, because things are not going to get fun when Michigan has to play Ohio State.
It's really not. It's college football is being dumb right now too. I mean, Notre Dame getting its ass kicked was pretty cool, but everyone else is like losing, and Alabama's. I'm completely diverting, but I can't stand Alabama. It's not that they keep winning; it's just that their football's so boring, and yet they just never lose.
Well, that's why I'm all into Miami. Like, they're going to be college football's next villain, and I'm excited about that.
What?
I love the turnover chain.
Turnover chain is the best thing to happen to football in maybe a decade.
I don't disagree with any of that.
Every NFL team has to have a turnover chain. We need to have it.
Let's give one to Darius Slay today, because he was awesome today.
We could. I'm going to say not a turnover chain, but let's go with a turnover title belt.
Oh, come on. Now you're getting into this. How about a?
Oh yeah.
How about a finger wag chain?
A finger wag chain.
A chain with just a big index finger pointing out of it at the bottom.
What if they just give Slay a foam finger? Like a giant foam finger.
Why don't they sell that? A Darius Slay foam finger? Maybe,
Jeremy.
Maybe we need to get in talk with breakingfoamfingers.com.
The powers that be could be listening to this podcast, and we are going to get zero royalties from this.
Copyright Pride of Detroit, please don't steal.
Please don't steal.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the NFC North and more football stuff. Maybe even some more college. I don't know, but just kind of amuse ourselves. I think I'm done talking about the Browns.
I can talk about the Browns.
Shut up. PODcast, Pride of Detroit. What else would it stand for? What else could POD ever stand for? Do not ask yourself that question. Do not answer that question. It just means Pride of Detroit.
Puppies Let's round around. Dogs.
What?
Puppies own dogs.
Doesn't make sense.
None of this makes sense, Chris.
Not how
this works. Let's talk about the rest of the NFC North.
Let's do it.
So,
which game do you want to talk about first?
Impulse makes me want to go to the Bears and the Packers.
All right,
just because
it
was a giant shit show, but I think we should save that. Let's save that. Let's talk about the Vikings first, who gets the win in Washington today, 38-30. And now they still keep a 2-point lead in the NFC North.
Yeah, they looked good today. I hate to say it, but they looked like a legit contender in the NFC. They led this game for the majority of it. Took the lead, I think, in the last minute of the first half, and basically had a 2-score lead until the very, very end. If you can do that with Case Keenum as your quarterback, that's kind of scary, right? I mean, he's essentially their third-string quarterback.
Yeah, Kirk Cousins had like 300 over 300 yards in this game too.
Like, yeah, it was a shootout, and Washington gave themselves a chance at the end. But man, I don't know. Like, I know the Lions already beat this Vikings team, but to me, this looks like a Vikings team that's only going to lose one or two more games down the stretch.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask, because like, it was an ugly game where the Lions won back earlier in the year, that 14-7 win. I just don't see that repeating at all in Ford Field on Thanksgiving. I really don't. This team just playing really well right now.
They are, and what are they on, a 5-game winning streak now? Yeah, 5-game winning streak. They're putting up a lot of points in some of these games. 33 against the Browns last week, 38 today, 34 against the Bucks earlier in the year.
Didn't you get in trouble on Twitter too because you said that the Vikings won confidently 38-30 and then said the Lions had to hang on 38-24? People got mad at you.
Yeah, in the NFC North standings post, I said something to the fact of it wasn't pretty, but the Lions, what did I say? They pushed through while the Vikings.
It doesn't matter. Like, you know, the spirit there. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's true. It's true. Yeah.
If you watch those games, the Lions did just kind of barely get by. Yeah, they probably deserved to win in the end. They scored, I think I was looking at this earlier, they averaged almost a full more yard per play. They just didn't get a lot of plays because Cleveland was having those long drives. While the Vikings, on the other hand, they had a 2-score lead for almost the entire second half. Washington scores a late touchdown. You know, if Cleveland scores that late touchdown, they were on the 2-yard line. If Darius Slay doesn't pick that ball off, suddenly the Lions only won by 7 points. I mean, final score has nothing to do with how close the game was. This Lions-Browns game was close. I would argue that the Vikings-Washington game was not that close.
What do you think, Ryan?
Man, I have a lot of things to say. First of all, Case Keenum at one point was like 200-some-odd yards and 4 touchdowns and no picks. Like, he was a man on fire. Like he was that guy who's on fire in the Pink Floyd music video. But then he threw the two picks, and I don't know if you guys saw this, but like in the just before the Vikings game had started, like Teddy Bridgewater was sitting on the bench, and like he was just so overcome with emotion for the fact that he was active and like he was like, you know, potentially could have participated in an NFL football game, and like brought him to tears. I was like, how can I not root for this guy? Like, and then the Vikings like doing the leapfrog celebration dance, which is probably the best celebration I've seen so far this season. Like, stop giving me reasons to like your team, Minnesota. It's pissing me off. But I don't know. At the same time, like I truly think, I mean, you mentioned this in the pregame show that we did, Jeremy, but the Vikings didn't have Everson Griffin. They didn't have Remmers today. And they went into Washington, a team that had everything to play for, because I think that this was probably a must win game for Washington, because they can't stand to lose any more games if they want to, you know, compete for a wild card spot.
Right.
And the Vikings went in there, they took care of business, and they got the W. Like, I can almost say with confidence at this point that the Vikings are going to win the NFC North. Like, I'm kind of at like 92%.
It does feel like it's going to happen, just because they're not wavering right now. Where the Lions are wavering, the Lions have won two straight, but they're wavering. And who knows what's going to happen next week at Chicago? Vikings have a really interesting game next week against the Rams, and yes. Then obviously we have Lions Vikings Thanksgiving. The problem with me though is, let's say everything goes Lions' way. Let's say the Lions win next week against the Bears, the Vikings lose against the Rams, and then the Lions beat the Vikings the following week. So now both teams are 7-4. And I know the Lions have a cake schedule ahead of them, and the Vikings have some bumps along the way.
Schedule, but it's a lot of games on the road, though.
Right. And I'm just saying, I think I might trust the Vikings more against at Falcons, at Panthers, home against Bengals, at Packers versus Bears. That's their final five games. Not easy, but I might trust them more than I trust the Lions right now to beat teams like the Bears, the Packers again, the Ravens at Baltimore, at Tampa. I don't know. This Vikings team is playing with a lot of confidence. They're decisively beating teams while the Lions are kind of dragging their feet. And even if the Lions tie things up by Thanksgiving, I don't think they're in the clear by any means.
Oh, no way. I completely
that
agree.
That even makes the New Year's Day game even worse.
Oh, God. Don't bring that up yet. That's so far away.
I was going to say, I could take this a step further. If the Vikings win next week against the Rams, they're winning the NFC North. Like, it doesn't matter what the Lions do.
That's going to be a hell of a game. Vikings-Rams. The Rams are just so good. We were talking about their point differential here, which is usually like, as a basic quick glance stat, point differential is a really good way to tell how a team's going to do in the postseason. And in the NFC, like, was the Rams are like, actually the Rams are the top in the league right now, plus 134.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Huge. Oh. I mean, yeah, they're legit. The Rams were a lot of fun to watch too. Like,
they really are. Like, it's amazing that all you need to do is just kick Jeff Fisher to the curb, and all of a sudden you're this incredibly fun team.
Yeah, I still think the Browns are like more talented than the Rams, though, on paper. But yeah. So,
I had a nice transition set up while we were still talking about the New Year's Day game to go to Packers Bears, but we just had to keep going down this road, and now we just have Ryan talking about the talented Cleveland Browns.
He's taking shots. At himself, I guess.
I don't know.
With Reno's bet.
I want to talk about, we've given enough time here. Now let's go to Packers Bears.
I didn't get to watch much of this game because it was ugly and horrible, and I don't care about either of these teams. I think they're both dead right now, even though the Packers came out on top and now they actually have the same record as the Lions, 5-4. I still think both teams are dead. That's all I have to say about this game.
What do you think, Brian? I don't know. I can't trust the Packers staying dead.
For For the Packers?
Like they're going to have the Ravens and the Buccaneers at home. The Lions get to play both, but they have to play both those teams on the road. And they're going to get to play the Browns as well. I really don't know what to do with the Packers right now.
Does anybody know what to do with the Packers right now? They had a couple of big injuries to Ty Montgomery and to Aaron Jones. If you don't have Hundley, if you don't have Rodgers, and all of a sudden you don't even have a running game to really stand on, can they score points?
Yeah, I mean, like, they went to Jamal Williams after Ty Montgomery got hurt, and he was averaging, what, 3.3 yards a carry? And that's most of that's from a long of 7. Like, he had 20 carries and he was going nowhere.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think that the Packers have too tough of a schedule, I think, to keep themselves really in it. I don't. Like, I'm sorry, I'm just trying to convince myself that New Year's Eve game won't matter.
I'm right there with you. I pray it will not matter. I'm praying. They're 1-2 in the division. I mean, no, they're 2-2 in the division right now.
But both those wins are against the Bears.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm almost fairly certain that the Lions' road to getting in the playoffs is going to be the wild card. And like I said, I mean, like, I'm 92% sure by my very specific calculations.
If it's the wild card, is that going to be reasonable for them? Because some of these other divisions are pretty well competitive. Carolina, like the NFC South and the NFC West currently hold those two wild cards. We're talking like Seahawks and Panthers, and who knows how the Falcons play here down the stretch.
I'm not overly impressed with the Seahawks. Plus, they lost Richard Sherman for the year. That's true.
What about the East? The Cowboys are still in it. NFC wild cards
lost today, though.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, these wild card spots are going to be, with everyone still humping around the same record, it's going to be really rough.
Yeah, it's going to be close. Like, I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not saying that the Lions are going to get in as a wild card. I'm just saying that it seems like it's going to be their only way of getting in. Do I think that they will? It's going to be a hell of a, you know, uphill slog to get to a wild card spot. There's no doubt about that. But I mean, there's some chinks in the armor for, like, Seattle, like I said, Richard Sherman being out for the entire year. The Cowboys, they might not have Zeke for the next 5 games, depending on how our judicial system works. So, it's so insane.
I'm looking at the standings right now. The Lions are in the 8th spot, so they're 2 out of the wild card. The 3 teams ahead of them, the Seahawks are 6-3. They're in that 5 spot. The Panthers are also 6-3. They're in the 5 spot. The Falcons are 5-4. They obviously have the tiebreaker, the head-to-head over the Lions. It's going to be tricky to jump. I don't think it'll be tricky to jump the Falcons because I don't think the Falcons are very good right now. It's going to be tricky to jump the Panthers. That team's 6-3. They have the tiebreaker over the Lions. There's a lot of ball game to be. There's still, you know, 6-7 games to be played left. So the Lions can theoretically make what's essentially a 2-game lead over the Panthers. But like you said, Seahawks are not very impressive right now. And just who knows? I kind of agree with you. Last week, I wouldn't have told you that this Lions team had a chance in hell to win the wild card. But right now, I'm feeling a little bit more confident about the wild card than I am the NFC North.
I just can't.
I don't want to play. I don't want to play too much inside baseball, but I'm going to for a second. So, like, the Panthers, there's going to be a little bit of, like, you know, there's going to be a lot of, like, especially in the NFC South, of those teams kind of, like, eating each other.
Right. That's
so,
true.
I mean, the Panthers still have to play the Saints again. They have to play the Vikings, and they have to play the Falcons again. And then there's also going to be some help along the way. Like, you know, if the Panthers beat the Vikings, that's good for the Lions. If the Vikings beat the Panthers, that's going to be good for the Lions. So, like, that's going to be a game where, like, no matter the outcome, something good is going to happen.
Right.
Or even, you know, they have to play Green Bay still. They have to play, you know, 2 NFC opponents that could help either pave the way for the Lions, or it could knock them down a serious peg, and all of a sudden the Lions could step up as serious, you know, wild card contenders. Do I think that it's, like I said, it's going to be really tough to get there, and there's a lot of tinkering, but yeah.
Okay, we've got 2 minutes here before we got to take a break. We've talked a lot about the Packers here. What words do we have for the Bears?
About to own them.
Yeah, it's officially Bears week when this gets released, so we own the Bears.
We do own the Bears.
Bears season, just, baby.
Like, oh my God, I've never seen a team turn that, a fan base turn on their coach so hard as they turned on John Fox for that, challenging that play.
Yeah, can we talk about that for a second?
Woo, you, as I said, you've got 2 minutes.
I think Ryan might have the best explanation of what happened, because I was watching at a bar without sound, so I wasn't entirely sure what was going on, but the description that you gave, Ryan, is glorious, and I think the people need to know if they don't know.
So Benny Cunningham stretches out for a touchdown. The refs rule him down out of bounds, but John Fox and his
infinite wisdom
and his partners also must have thought that Benny Cunningham, when he reached out for the pylon with the football, or he reached out with the football to get to the pylon, that he touched the pylon with the football, which did happen. But the only problem was that the football wasn't in Benny Cunningham's possession. So instead of it being down short of the goal line, it ended up being Packers football, because Benny Cunningham let go of the football before he got into the end zone, and Bears.
Right. So essentially, if the Bears hadn't challenged that play, they would have had the ball like first and goal or whatever.
Oh boy.
But instead, they challenged looking for a touchdown, and instead they got a turnover.
Instead, they gave the ball to the Packers.
It's beautiful. That's beautiful. I don't know what to say about this performance overall, though. They finally seem to be unshackling Mitchell, and he had almost 300 yards today, but he was sacked 5 times.
Sounds like a bad idea. That sounds like a bad idea. Don't take the chains off of Mitch Trubisky yet. I hope they do for the Lions game. That's awesome. Do that, because do we really want Jordan Howard running against the Lions defense at this point?
I mean, I guess it depends if we have the answer.
He was running against this Green Bay team, and he was getting nothing done. So I don't know. Let's take a break, and when we come back, mailbag time. Mail time, hashtag ask POD for all your inquiries about the Lions or anything else. Anything, really. I'm dead serious. Anything. Anything in the world. Before we do that, Jeremy has the reviews. Are we at 100 yet?
We are at 93 total. So we need 7 more, but these are the last 2 that we have. So if you don't know what that means, it means next week we might have some wrestling talk. And
I'm just saying, and looking our news out of New Japan. So just be ready, because it's coming.
I don't know what any of that means, but yeah, if we don't get any reviews this upcoming week, that means we have to endure more wrestling talk. And based on most of these reviews, it seems like you guys don't want that. So maybe throw in a review this week. Anyways, the first of our 2 reviews comes from someone named AAONLES, which I'm not going to try to pronounce. He says, one of the best Lions podcasts. Gives us 5 stars. He says, right now, POD is the best website for Lions info, but on their podcast, I'm disappointed in the lack of talk of about politics. I need to know how football analysts think about politics before I can form my opinion. Honestly, who gives a shit? I'm really disappointed in the lack of wrestling talk on the show. They need a segment about 10 minutes long on this topic every show. NFL players always seem to do a match in the NFL. My question is, would Zettel make it in WWE? Would he be a heel or a babyface? What would be his finisher? Similar to Goldberg, but call something the deforestation. Deforestation.
I think he'd be part of New Day.
That man just totally built Anthony Zettel's gimmick. And I'm all about
Zettel. I thought he said Ansa. Yeah.
And he said that he wants his finisher to be like Goldberg's spear, but he wants it to be called the deforestation. And I think that's the greatest thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
I'll give it up for that, too. Our second review comes from JAP83. Again, I'm not going to pronounce that. He gives us 4 out of 5 stars. Says, awesome POD cast. Great to have some good Lions content in Maryland. I once got berated by local talk radio host when I asked him about recently departed Ravens secondary coach Terrell Austin and what to expect of him with the Lions, especially after iHeartRadio decided to block access to local Detroit radio sports or sports radio. I started listening this year, and the takes are on point, and the show was super funny. You lose 1 star for your South Park bashing, which I think is something Chris did like 2 months ago.
South Park is trash.
If I could, I would drop another half star for that prediction of Chicago's defense getting pounded by Carolina's offense. Again, that was a couple weeks ago. Keep up the good work.
Hold up. We can't have these takes if you guys are deducting points from us. You get these takes unvarnished. You cannot punish us just because we're giving it from the heart. That's how we get our best takes. Some things are going to fly with the all, some things are not.
Well, this last thing is a take from him that's not going to fly with either of you guys. He said, wrestling peaked with DX, so unless you are going to talk about Road Dogg and Triple H, no wrestling talk.
Hey, you can go ahead and talk about more. You can deduct more points for me because the Road Dogg literally was one of the worst things that ever happened to WWE. So
we can talk about Triple H, though.
I mean,
You can next week if there's no reviews. Other than that, I think it's time for mailbag.
Talk about making a career out of the bike. God, whatever.
Okay. I'm just saying, that was a really good 30 for 30.
It was good. I'm trying to get Jeremy to watch it, but he won't.
Maybe when football's over. I mean, football doesn't exist anymore.
We're trending.
That's coming sooner. No, what happens is that football is going to stop existing and you're going to have to watch esports, you little curmudgeon.
God, no. That's my hellscape.
I'm watching Overwatch League. That's what's going to replace this after wrestling talk. We can't do it. I'm going to try shoehorning in Overwatch League.
We will both smite you.
Pride Overwatch Detroit.
Smite is an esport, too. All right, let's get to the questions. I had a really good one lined up, and let's actually start with Ty Finchy. Finch Ty. Worst commercial you've ever seen?
I haven't thought about this, I don't have a great answer, but the one that pops up to mind first is that Little Caesars commercial where the guy like imagines that he's in a rock band or something. I don't even remember the premise to the episode or to the commercial. He does the knee slide with the air guitar, and somehow that's supposed to make me want quote unquote Detroit style pizza.
I'm remembering one similar with the mariachi band, except it's like for the deep dish lunch combo.
Oh God.
The deep dish combo mambo.
Oh, that's right. I know that one. God, that's awful.
For lunch. No, I'm fascinated. This isn't my real answer because I'm sure I could go back in time and find a lot of really bad ones, but I am utterly fascinated by the idea that Kendall Jenner's entire celebrity status got obliterated by that Pepsi ad she did.
Yeah, that was bad. That was no good.
Like, but just the idea that like that one, she still talks about that commercial today about how she is still just bereft of the reaction from it. And part of that is the Jenner Kardashian syndrome there. But I'm just fascinated by the idea that you can get erased for starring in a commercial that's just so bad that Pepsi just has to pull it.
Dude, but that's all, like you said, though, that's part of like the Jenner Kardashian formula. Like all of a sudden, like Jenner is now a victim of making a shitty decision to be a part of a bad commercial.
Yeah, no, she's like, definitely playing up her victim status, but I'm just saying, like, at the same time, too, it's not like other people are like, oh, you know what? We still want to hear from Kendall Jenner.
Yeah,
career's over.
I mean,
Pepsi ad.
I have a feeling she'll bounce back.
She'll be fine. She's got all
white female. Yeah, so
she's got that Kardashian money. She's fine.
She's got that going for her. My worst commercial. I don't know why this sticks out to me, but there's a McDonald's commercial. Surprise, it's a McDonald's commercial.
Here we go.
Still have serious beef with them. But there's this commercial where this there's a wedding and the bride and groom get into the limo.
Oh, I know this. Yes, yes.
And there's two quarter pounders and a fry sitting there. And it's from the dad of the bride. And it says, there's never time to eat at your own wedding. Here are two quarter pounders and a fry. Like, gee, thanks, dad. Like, you
couldn't
really...
Wait, they're
going
to a reception. What the hell does he mean, no time to eat?
The whole thing, I mean, I understand the premise of it. Like, you don't get time to sit down and eat because you have to go, like, schmooze and, like, talk to, like, all the relatives and all the people you invite, so you can't ever, like, sit down and actually eat.
But you're at the head of the table. You can sneak in a few bites.
I know. Like, okay, like, I get the premise of it, but Dad went out of his way to get us McDonald's. Like, two quarter pounders. Like, come on.
I like also the idea that a dad left his daughter's wedding to go make to a McDonald's run.
Went through the drive-thru. Like, and he's some hero.
I'm just imagining, like, a little bit of ketchup drips down onto the bride's dress, too.
Oh, I know. Like, come on. Huge L. Dead. Unbelievable.
The biggest L.
Yeah. I don't know why that commercial stuck with me, but I hate it.
That's a great answer.
I remember it, though. It's pretty bad. It's really bad. What's also bad is these Coke commercials that are now like, hey, you know what's really good? Coke with food.
What? I don't know what you're talking about, but this is an interesting concept. I ought to try that.
Does Ryan know what I'm talking about, at least?
I've like given up Coca-Cola ever since I quit working for their awful corporation.
I need to keep drinking Coke. I can't stop.
Sponsor us, Coke. We'll make Ryan shut up.
Please, please don't sponsor us. I know what's going to happen.
We don't want your stupid, dirty money.
Nor Pepsi either. The only pop we're going to take is like Jarritos or Faygo.
Soda, yeah. Yeah.
Pop.
Troy Kilgore. What are POD's thoughts on the National Wrestling Alliance being rebooted?
What is happening right now? You guys are going to get your wrestling talk next week because no one's going to put on any reviews.
Look, we said to sneak it in questions, here. Take questions from about anything. I don't feel strongly about this, though. I didn't even know the NWA was getting rebooted. It's just fraudulent. What do you got, Ryan?
Okay, hold on. Because this is something that even Jeremy could get on a little bit, maybe. Do you know who's trying to get the National Wrestling Alliance rebooted?
No.
No.
Billy Corgan bought the National Wrestling Alliance.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Billy Corgan. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I love the idea of the Smashing Pumpkins trying to reboot the National Wrestling Alliance, which
is his walkout music. Is his walkout music? Is he going to be like a McMahon figure and he's going to have Bullet with butterfly wings coming out as his like music? All of a sudden, like two guys are going to be fighting and he's going to come out kind of like, you know, the guy from Lucha Underground just randomly change the match to like a steel cage match, and you're just going to hear the music drop. The world is a vampire.
Yes. For when they bring out Vampiro, when they scoop him up and to underground on a ludicrous contract.
Season four, baby.
Yeah, I don't like, just my real quick answer to this is no, it'll die and it won't work because it's not WWE. They're the corporation.
I mean, like, yeah. No. TNA is like, paying people to be fans. Yeah, like, I mean, indies are fine, but you've got to be like a WWE aligned indie almost.
Okay, I'll respectfully go on to the next question. Sorry, Jeremy. Yep. We're just answering the questions that we get.
You're just skirting the rules. We got tons of questions, and suddenly that one made it through the filter, huh?
Shout out Troy Kilgore.
Getting close to Megan the show, Nisbet. Troy.
Megan Nisbet. If Jared Davis were a wrestler, what type of fighting style would he use?
Get out of here!
It's the Lions question.
Stop it!
I think he would use, his finisher would have to be like the Gator Chomp.
The missed tackle. How about that?
Oh, whoa! Jesus. Talk about creating a gimmick, Jeremy. Full heel.
Yep.
Man, this has got to be a work. But, I don't know. Like, Jared Davis would just have to suplex people into oblivion because that's what he does out on the field. When he actually gets a hold of them, right, Jeremy?
Yeah.
Probably a strong ground game, but yeah, he's just one of those guys. He's going to be a comedic act, like guys slipping out from his grip. The main man, I'm in need of a new show to binge watch. Any recommendations?
Monday Night Raw.
It's the I'm going to murder you.
The longest weekly episodic television show in the history of cable television. I've
been dying to fly back to Detroit. You just gave me a reason.
Come at me, bro.
Mr. Robot, if you haven't done that yet.
Yeah, Mr. Robot. It was really good last week. Holy shit.
I didn't realize this. The new Star Trek is going to be on Netflix now and not on the stupid fucking CBS app. Maybe something to check out.
When is the Netflix bubble going to pop?
Soon, I think.
They spend so much money. Like I know some people in production, and they talk about, like, they really want to just get a Netflix show because everyone gets paid.
Right. Like,
but that's the problem. It's paid. Like, they don't. Yeah, but it's kind of like The Athletic right now. I know we talked about this before. They throw up both Netflix and The Athletic throw out a ton of money, but they don't really make money back.
Right.
It's just assumed that it's at one point magically, like, all this venture capital money that's being thrown at them is just going to turn to profit. And I don't know. I mean, shit, Twitter doesn't even turn to profit.
Yeah, I was, what was it? So, like, I mean, it was really cool when Netflix decided, like, oh, hey, you know what? You know who doesn't, like, corner the market on anything? Or, you know what, people, like, nobody really has a corner on this market? They're like, we're going to be the people who, you know, pay comedians to do stand up. Like, because I mean, have you ever noticed on Netflix, you go on there and there's like a thousand new stand ups?
Oh my God, it's awful.
No, it's great.
No, I think it's great. But at the same time, like, they're doling out like serious money. Like, Chappelle got paid.
Yeah.
Seinfeld. I mean, those are checks that I think eventually their ass can't catch. Like, I don't know. Like, it's a weird market to corner. Like, I love it. I love stand-up comedy. But, like, I'm just not sure if it was the wise thing to do.
Maybe not. Let me give some quick, it's while we're on Netflix recommendations. The new Patton Oswalt special, Annihilation, amazing. American Vandal. I don't know how many times I can say this. American Vandal, you need to binge that right now. Absolutely hilarious take on, you know, crime dramas or crime documentaries.
A parody of kind of like Making a Murderer. Right?
I am getting Netflix back, and I'm like a season and a half behind on Narcos, so I guess I'll throw that in there if you haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one too. I haven't seen the new season of that, and there was one more I was going to give, and now I can't remember it.
Jeremy,
let's go on to the next question.
Jeremy, real quick, did you watch the Freelander?
Oh yeah, the where he's talking about how America's great or whatever, the stand-up special.
America's the greatest country in the United States.
Yeah, I saw half that. That's pretty good. It's mostly crowd work, which is interesting to make for a special, but he does a good job.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Ron Haskell, where does Golden Tate rank among Detroit Lions' best all-time receivers? Where could he end up in those rankings when it's all said and done?
Here's the thing. I'm not going to answer this question because Kent Lee Platy has an article in the hopper coming Monday morning about this very topic.
Well, now you can turn to PrideDetroit.com and you will be able to see it. Go find it. We'll wait. Yeah, we're done waiting. I hope you paused the podcast to go read that.
Pretty good article, right?
An adequate article.
You, just to be clear, you said an adequate, not inadequate.
An adequate, yeah. Cankers, really hard to talk. OJ the Juiceman asks us, at the Jews is loose. Once again, that, I'm going to get in trouble because I just did not say that clearly enough.
Dude, OJ Simpson murdered whole human beings. And we're laughing about it right now.
I still believe we make the playoffs, but we draft a defensive lineman in the first two rounds this year, right?
God, I hope so. I was just talking about this with a friend of mine. If a defensive end is not in the first two picks of their draft next year, I don't know what they're doing.
One of my favorite things about this game that happened on Sunday was when the Browns did jump out to a 10-0 lead, and Jeremy tweeted out an article of the top interior offensive lineman available that Kent wrote. I was total tongue in cheek, but that got me to a good laugh in the press box. But Yeah, it has to be defensive line, right? I mean, what if the Lions go running back? Like, how upset would you be if they drafted a running back in the first round?
It depends who it is. And I'm not, it's early enough where I can't even throw out names, but
what if they drafted Fitzgerald Toussaint in the first round?
They would have some serious questions to answer about breaking rules. But I would 10 out of 10 love it.
Joe Cobble, I noticed the Lions rarely attempt any long passes early in games. Are they too risky early on, or would a deep pass or two surprise the opponent's defense?
I mean, they're just... that's a hard question to answer because they really just don't throw deep, period. They're not a team that does that a lot anymore. I think they like to do it once they have something established, whether it's a short passing game, a running game, whether they're establishing the running game, guys. Mm-hmm. They pick and choose their shots, and they don't throw it a lot. And maybe we'll see more with Kenny Golladay. You know, he caught that 50-yarder today, so we might see it a little bit more. But Ryan made a good point in our pregame show before the Browns game. When the Lions do take shots, they really like to just kind of take them down the sidelines. And maybe that's something that eventually changes where they test kind of the deep safeties in the middle of the field, but it's just not something that they like to do, period, let alone at the beginning of games.
Yeah, I mean, they just don't have the weapons to really go deep down the field.
I mean, Stafford needs enough time, right?
Well, that too. But I mean, like, even if you're going deep, who would you throw it to? That's like the one thing Golden Tate really isn't good about. And Marvin Jones is, I mean, I guess he's your deep threat, but he never gets separation.
Not up the middle. When we were having that conversation before the Browns game, the only time I can remember Marvin Jones ever catching a deep ball down the middle was that one against Washington last year, where he didn't have any separations. It was just a perfectly thrown ball and a really impressive catch, too.
Ryan?
Sports.
Thank you for listening to the Pride Detroit POD cast. We are on iTunes and Stitcher. Our main theme was produced by Ryan Shepherd. You can find him on Twitter and on SoundCloud at I am Brian Shepherd, IamBrianSheppard. Thanks a lot to him. Check out his stuff. He's been great. He gave us Victory Monday, so go check him out. That's I am Brian Shepherd. And thank you for everyone who keeps listening and makes us one of the greatest Lions podcasts possible. Y'all are awesome. See you, Starside.